Sunday came and Tracy and Paul found themselves in Bonington Square. Doug, a friend of Paul's, had acquired the necessary scissors and stools. He'd set the gear up in a derelict house. Various TV companies were manoeuvring cameras around the house. There was an hour to go before the events officially kicked off, but already a small crowd had gathered in the tiny park at the centre of the square. The crowd increased as the minutes ticked away and the appointed hour grew nearer. Several press cameramen arrived, as did Chicken Feed Catfish, Christine, Wayne and Alan. Paul announced that he was ready for people to come and get their hair cut. He added that if anyone wanted to cut hair, they should come on over to the peace parlour too. Scissors snipped and the hours passed quickly. People went into the peace parlour with long hair and left with crops which would have been the pride of an East End skinhead. Doug swept up the split ends and packed them into plastic bin liners. By 4 o'clock, nearly 30 bulging bin bags had been stacked in a back room. The television crews concentrated on the famous who were donating their locks for peace. Of the unknowns, it was only those who volunteered pubic hair who had their charitable antics filmed. Volunteers were still queuing up to donate their locks to the peace movement. Things were running late. Paul had not expected so many people to turn up to donate their hair, but by 6:45 the last locks had been cut and swept into bin liners. Paul had lost count of the number of bags which had been filled. It was lucky that Doug had organised a couple of vans to transport the hair to Whitehall. The vans were somewhat on the small side, and there was no way the entire peace offering could have been fitted into one of them. Downing Street was blocked off by traffic barriers. The vans made no attempt to break through them. Side doors were swiftly opened and the hair dumped onto the ground. Two bemused bobbies wandered up to find out what was going on. "We've just abandoned our plans to start a wig-making business," Paul told them as Doug and several others continued to dump hair onto the street. "Don't try and get funny with us, Sonny," one of the coppers told him without putting too much authority into his voice. The scene was so ludicrous that the pig found it hard to treat very seriously. His partner, fearing some kind of protest, was about to take a harder line when the arrival of several journalists and a TV crew made him think the better of it. As long as the meat were about, he'd soft-pedal it. A huge mountain of hair had been deposited on the street. Doug unscrewed a bottle and poured petrol over the hair. Paul struck a match and tossed it onto the pyre. The cops realised there was little point in trying to douse the fire and jump back from the flames. The lads who'd helped unload the vans started their engines. They pulled out onto the street just as the fire caught. The hair was crackling. It smelt revolting, like dead bodies burning. Paul and Doug moved over to the journalists. The coppers were raging for a fire engine. "Peace," Paul was saying, "is not simply a matter of abolishing war. To abolish war, you have to abolish the economic system which supports it. That is to say, the capitalist system. A system based on profit and exploitation. A system which would collapse if it wasn't propped up by a war economy." "But why this form of protest?" one of the reporters inquired. "In my opinion," Paul's monologue was cut short by a hand on his shoulder. "You're under arrest." "My only crime," officer Paul replied, "is to protest against an order which places profit above human community." "Save it for the judge," the policeman told him. "Right now, you and your mates are going to take a trip down to squad headquarters."